for later. But it happened that in the South they closed the synagogues over the summer, and they wouldn't pay a salary for it. I got from all congregations together $30 a week, from which I also spent the expenses, yes, traveling and so on. And but $30 a week was a lot of money in those times. But I traveled by bus and by train, and the children, the people who were at that time my children, they remember me well. But it was only a few months that they closed the synagogue, and I stood there, what shall I do? Then Mr. Jack Kuhn in Spartanburg, South Carolina, who had this shirt factory, he says, if you want to work, you can come to me. That was the best thing anybody could do. Yeah. So I stayed in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and got a room in the YMCA, and went to work for Dixie Shirt Company. I started out as a laborer, and then learned a little, and then after I had learned 3 years, Mr. Heilbrun let me come to Lowell.
How did you and link up with Richard Heilbrun in the first place?
Also a story. While I was in Magdeburg was the biggest city, was a provincial capital of the province Sachsen. And the Jews had an organization for Sachsen and Anhalt. Anhalt was a principality, now a little state. And we had in Magdeburg, under the presidency of or chairmanship of the rabbi, Rabbiner Dr. Wilde, a Provinzialverband der jüdischen Gemeinden. And they provided for religious education in some of these little towns. But since I taught almost every afternoon, I had only time to go to one little place, Gardelegen, once in the week for an hour or so, and taught a few children. But then we also had a big welfare organization. We had a Jewish welfare office in Magdeburg. It was a congregation. It was a congregational poor. And then besides that, we had a Provinzialverband für jüdische Wohlfahrtspflege, provincial organization for Jewish welfare, which was under the leadership of the, what was the name, allgemein, the Deutsche, Zentralwohlfahrtsstelle der deutschen Juden, the Central Welfare Office of the German Jews, was in Berlin. And the leading lady at that time was Fräulein Blank. And we had in Magdeburg a trained welfare worker with an academic background. We had there for a while a girl called Dr. Danelius. Yes, she was a college-educated welfare worker. Welfare was a big affair in pre-Hitler time Germany, just like in the Democratic United States, but much better organized. And Dr. Danelius. And then we had Fräulein Eichhorn, was a lovely girl, was a good friend of mine before I married, and so on. Anyway, I was always close together with these welfare workers. Then came the time that the organization didn't have enough money anymore to pay full-time academic trained people. They demand a certain salary. So I asked to do that job on the sideline, because I taught the Jewish children every afternoon from Monday through Friday. And I had the evenings, and I had the whole mornings to do something. And I took over that office of the Provinzialverband Jüdischer Wohlfahrtswesen. And it functioned. It functioned very well. And the times in Germany got worse and worse, and more problems developed. And it was necessary that I traveled every Sunday almost. I left by train in the morning, came back late in the afternoon, and over Sundays I visited one or two small Jewish congregations in the countryside to see what had to be done and what could be done for them. Then after 33, when the Gestapo, when the Hitler started getting their fingers in everything, the Gestapo required that every week, every month, once, a book had to be submitted for a check that the Jewish poor were not given more benefits than those in the German nation. So I had to go every week one morning to the Gestapo and had to present my lectures. Well, it worked out very well, you know. If I do something, I have that old principle, if it's worth doing at all, it's worth doing it right. And so I had no trouble with them. It became more formality later. And but
Richard,
you find in my papers, when you also a letter of recognition before I left from the Zentral Wohlfahrtsstelle der Deutschen Juden in Berlin, wishing me well on my emigration to America. I was well recognized.
No, Richard, how did old Richard fit
did
into this? How did Heilbronn fit into this, though?
Where gets the Heilbronns in? That is now the thing. Because in our organization, in our Provinzialverband für Jüdische Wohlfahrtswesen, of course, we had a board. And one member of those of that board was Mrs. Margolinsky. She was the wife of a pharmacist. And I was a good friend, because I was in the early years, when I first came to Magdeburg, and was in the Jewish youth organization. Her daughter was also in that organization. And she got married to the Hans Frank, Frankenstein, Hans Frank, who is the brother of our friend Heidi Brauer. In,
the big lawyer on Wall Street, Johnny.
Margolinsky married Hans Frank?
Yeah. Right.
And anyway, when we came over here, Mrs. Margolinsky is a relative of the Heilbrunns, because the Frankensteins, who had this, so Hans Frank's parents, the Frankensteins were relatives to these Heilbrunns. The Frankensteins were relatives to the Heilbrunns.
And we knew
the Frankensteins already from Magdeburg, because Evie's mother is a relative to the Frankensteins. Evie's mother was also while in Magdeburg.
Which is Evie's
Center.
Oh, this center.
Yeah. Was but also to make it short, Mrs. Margulinsky wrote to Heilbrunn's, can you not help that Mr. Rosenberg could go back to teach?
No, it was not, like, not quite like that. It was the other way. Mr. Heilbrunn, after he had settled in the South, was appalled by the Jewish wasteland in those small congregations, because they had no rabbis. Yes, they didn't have this institution like we had in Germany in the small cities, that the Jewish teacher who is trained as a professional teacher for public school work is also trained as a religious teacher, also trained as a cantor for the congregation, also has sometimes the possibility to be a preacher, because he can write out an essay and can read the essay from the pulpit. Yeah, that was in Germany. They were used to those things, the Heilbrunns, and they come to the South and there's nothing, Jewish wasteland. And he wrote that to his relative, to Mrs. Margulinsky, not to ask her for somebody.
He was just complaining. When, he was stating
just,
a fact.
A statement. And so Mrs. when I came over, Mrs. Margulinsky typed all, translated all my credentials from Magdeburg and all these, and translated them in English and sent them over there, and thought he should make some contact for me. And so when I came over, he put me in his Packard and drove miles and miles from little town to little town, introduced me, and thought. And so Gastonia and Spartanburg were the places where they caught on. And we thought we had something going, if it was not for the summer. And summer, we said, don't have service, they don't pay. And so I had no job. And then Jack Kuhn offered me a job. And so I got into another field. But wherever I was, I volunteered always my services, except for religious school. I tried that once. Then I came to the realization, I cannot get along with those rotten Jewish children in America.
Right.
I, you know, the basic of my teaching was that I needed discipline.
Right.
Yes? I didn't, in Germany, we were used to it. And that was already a fact. When I was still in the seminary, and we had there a training school, in elementary school, on which the seminarists in their two last years had to have had to teach, had to take over classrooms and teach certain subjects, one of them class to class. And the school had a high rating at the school authorities in Hanover, where I went to school. And then there was a job offer for somebody, and we hadn't passed, hadn't finished our exams work yet, and our principal, our professor, Dr. Knoller, the headmaster of the school, wanted to recommend me to for that job in Mislowitz Oberschlesien, Upper Silesia. But I had not passed my exam yet, so he gave me a preliminary recommendation. Yes, and in that recommendation he wrote, he treats the children with love and keeps excellent discipline. There is no contradiction in that. Yeah? And that was a way I could teach everywhere, even in Magdeburg, the Jewish children. And I had a funny thing. I had every spring and fall, I got laryngitis and couldn't speak. I went into the classroom and wrote with big on the table, quiet, teacher cannot talk. Yes. Then I taught whispering or ask a child to come in front and read or something like that. Well, discipline was always my basis. And also when I taught a few months public school in Oberstein, Irma was in that class. And children still remember me from the time when I when I taught, even at Christmas time, I sang with them Christmas carols, and so on. Didn't make any difference. It was fine. I enjoyed the time. I would have liked to do that for years without any pay. The government could, they were short of teachers, and I volunteered my services. But the government of the state of Birkenfeld, of the province Birkenfeld, could not accept that service because since I didn't get any pay, I could not be held responsible. Yes, no liability. And so I had to give that up in the school, and I regretted it very much. I belonged to the organization there when we had training courses every year, summer there. We had once a beautiful psychology course in summer for school teachers of that area by Professor Gelb from Frankfurt. And he asked always a few volunteers to read up on certain subjects and then report as an addenda to his lectures. I get that I...
Listen, how is it Mrs. Schwann? Is she a cousin of yours?
No, she is a daughter of my first cousin.
Oh.
On my mother's side.
No, yeah, that's
they belongs. To, she belongs in this group.
Who is she? Schramm?
She lives in Schramm. She lives in Boca Raton,
right.
And I know she's a cousin, but it's already another generation.
A child of a cousin. Of
I had one of my mother's brothers was Uncle Abraham Wechsler in Aschbach, who was a school teacher, cantor, and so on in Aschbach. The grandson of the great rabbi. Yes?
Right.
First the son of the great rabbi was school teacher in Aschbach. If you ever saw it, you would wonder. And then his grandson was teacher there. And this Uncle Abraham had two daughters and one son. The son died early. And those two daughters were Ida, and Jenny. Jenny didn't get married. And Ida married her cousin, Samuel Fleischmann from Nuremberg. And Samuel and Ida had a daughter. What's her name?
Rachel.
Rachel.
Rachel. She's a lovely person.
And Rachel got married to a man, to a very irreligious man, Schramm.
Yeah.
And in New York. And Mr. Schramm